Welcome to another episode of Investing with IBD. It's Wednesday, November 29th, 2023, and I'm Justin Yielsen alongside our co-host who joins us every week. It's Arusha Pieris from O'Neill Global Management. How you doing, Arusha?
I'm doing well, Justin.
Well, we've got an exciting show for you today because when we say 80s bands, what's your favorite 80s band, Arusha?
You know,
do you remember the 80s?
I didn't really like too many 80s bands, but there was a point where I did get into Poison.
Okay, very good. Well, I mean, I went to a Guns N' Roses Metallica concert in 1992. I just saw Tears for Fears in concert not too long ago. They're getting up there in years, but when we say 80s bands in the finance area, we're really talking about Bollinger Bands. So it's my pleasure to bring to the stage here John Bollinger, the creator of Bollinger Bands. He's also the president of Bollinger Capital Management. Great to have you on the show here, John.
Oh, my pleasure, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
So we're also going to get into, of course, Bollinger Bands and, you know, how you kind of came up with this concept and, more importantly, the way to use this concept for everyday trading. We'll also talk a little bit about ETFs and the pitfalls and, you know, reasons why you might want to be shifting more towards individual stocks. So we got a lot to cover, but let's get right into it. And John, you were kind enough to provide us with a little presentation yourself to kind of help address the issue of Bollinger Bands. So we can kind of go to your presentation so we can kind of walk through the concept here. But first, before we kind of tell people what it is, what was it that made you kind of think that this was a good idea and something that technical analysis needed?
Well, before I get to the answer to that, I have a little tiny story to tell you.
Okay.
Back in the days, I'm an old fan of the William O'Neill Company. Back in the days, I used to, on Saturday mornings, we would actually go down to the printing plant to get the daily graphs, charts as they came off the press Saturday morning. And a whole bunch of market junkies and, you know, market timers, stock pickers and stuff gather around, you know, all holding our little paper cups of coffee. And
Oh, do you have any pictures of that? That would just be awesome to see a picture from, you know, probably see who you could pick out in the crowd.
I'm afraid I don't.
And then you also were on the Financial Network. There was a show that Bill had on, and so you got to chat with him a little bit during the those FNN days, before and after that show, right?
Yeah, that was a very special opportunity. My office was just outside of the green room, which is where guests would gather before they were due to be on air. And you know, Bill would come in, and I'd go into the green room, sit and chat with him. It was a real opportunity. I got to do the same with many other people. So that was a really fantastic benefit of being at FNN in those years.
Yeah. Well, and John, you know, honestly, even before just getting into why you came up with the Bollinger Bands and kind of what the issues saw with technical analysis, how did you get into even technical analysis? How did you get even into the industry?
Story, but I'll try to make really short of it. My mother was getting ready to retire. She had a small business in New York. And she was getting really bad financial advice. And she knew that I'd liked stocks and I'd had an interest in them for years and years. And she said, well, how about you take care of my retirement? So
no pressure.
That was the door. So I tried just straight up fundamental analysis and I found that very frustrating. And I tried, you know, brokerage house research and I found that very frustrating. And then I tried technical analysis, and the moment I started doing technical analysis, I understood that was it for me. So that's how I got in. That would be 1978, 79, 1980 in that range.
And of course you do have, both, your CFA and CMT, Arusha has a CMT as well. I am CMT-less, but you know,
who's counting?
I know, exactly. Okay, let's go ahead and get into now the Bollinger Band story. How'd you come up with the Bollinger Bands?
So I was an option trader in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. Option premium was running very high. It was pretty easy to make a living trading options in those days. But the key to option trading is the same as it's always been, and that's a good estimate of volatility. Mm-hmm. I was lucky I had an early microcomputer. This was in the days before PCs, but I had a spreadsheet called SuperCalc, and I would use it to calculate the volatilities for option trading. And one day I copied the formula for volatility down a column of data, and I saw that it was changing over time. Mm-hmm. That doesn't sound special today because we know that volatility is volatile. But back in those days, we thought that volatility was a property, like the house is white or the car is blue, and that it didn't change over time. Mm-hmm. So I had been using fixed width trading bands. We called them percentage trading bands.
Sure.
And I was looking for a way to automate setting them because it was a very labor intensive process to set the width of the bands, pencil, paper, overlays, and stuff like that back in those days.
Yeah.
And the problem really is that you let your emotions into the trading process when you did that, because if you were bullish, you set the bands to present a bullish picture. If you're bearish, you set the bands to present a bearish picture. So I wanted to automate them. And I saw that volatility was changing over time. And I said, ooh, I bet I can use that to set the width of bands.
Oh, interesting. So when you started seeing like the bands tighten, were you just kind of starting to play around with it and you started seeing the bands tighten, volatility decreasing, all of a sudden you saw a pretty strong move one way or the other? Is that
actually that wasn't the start. For me, that was the second stage for me. The first stage for me was just to if the price of a stock was high enough to get to the upper band, mm-hmm. I would then compare the action of a couple of indicators, volume indicators and such like that, and see if they confirmed. And if they didn't, then I would take that as a non-confirmation. And the same on the downside. If weakness got down there, if the indicators confirm the weakness, then you just assume that you're going to go further.
Yeah.
But, it was like that for me in the beginning. It was only later, a couple of years later, when I really started to focus on the dynamic changing quality of the bands and talk about things like the squeeze when the bands are very tight together, or the bulge when the bands are very, very, very far apart.
Mm-hmm. Well, it might be a good idea for us to bring some visuals up at this point. And so for people listening in, as we get to this visual component, you might just look back on this at your leisure and go to investors.com/podcast or onto the YouTube channel where you can see the visuals. But let's go ahead and start. Again, you kind of said that the Bollinger Bands are helping you define kind of a high and low on a relative basis. So what do you mean by that, on a relative basis?
So by definition, prices are high when they are at the upper Bollinger Band. And by definition, prices are relatively low when they are at the lower Bollinger Band. That's sort of the key to all trading bands, not just Bollinger Bands. There are many other flavors of trading bands out there that are used by traders. But that's sort of the generic idea behind all trading bands. You then use that information to compare price action to the action of indicators or to do pattern recognition, things like that. So they give you a frame of reference. That's that on a relative basis. They give you a relative frame of reference to frame price action and make decisions, rigorous decisions, I might add.
And just real quickly, again, this is something that a lot of us might take for granted because it really does seem kind of simple when you think about it. You pick a time period and do standard deviations. But what time period? Why did you decide on a time period of 20?
So, that was the time period we were using at the time. At the time, the most popular market timing system was a very simple system using the Dow Jones Industrial Average and a 21-day moving average and bands that were spread 4.5% above it and 4.5% below it. That was just I don't know who came up with that, but it had been around for some years, and it was a very accurate market timing system. We would compare price within those bands to the action of two indicators, one based on up and down volume and the other based on advances and declines. Mm-hmm. And if you get to the upper band and one of those indicators was negative, that would be a sell alert. If you get to the lower band, one of those indicators was positive, that would be a buy alert. So I just adopted the 21. I don't know. I changed it to 20. I changed to 20 at some point. I couldn't really tell you why, but yeah. There it is.
Yeah, just to make it even. And then you're just taking a standard deviation, right? Or two standard deviations, I should say, above and below. Just that easy, right? Yeah,
the volatility calculation is simply the population standard deviation calculation. And the upper band is two times the standard deviation above the middle band, which is the 20-day moving average. And the lower band is two times the standard deviation below the same middle band, that 20 period moving average.
And of course, for those stats geeks, that kind of tells you that most of the action is going to be in between those bands. But as you said, it's really about where you're at within the band. So here's the DIA, which is the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And what is it that you're looking at here, and how do you use these bands? And just so people know and orient themselves, the blue line here is your 20-day moving average line. The upper red band is your two standard deviations above, and your green line is your two standard deviations below.
Correct. And then in the clip immediately below price, that sort of jagged line there, that's percent B. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes. And in the clip beneath that, that's bandwidth, which tells you how wide the bands are. Mm-hmm. So percent B tells us where we are in relation to the bands. Mm-hmm. So, I've highlighted three setups here. The one on the left there is a squeeze. Excuse me. The one on the left there is a squeeze. That's where bandwidth is very tight, and it's a forecast for increased volatility. And you can see that a fairly meaningful decline comes out of that squeeze. And over on the right-hand side of the screen, there's another circle, and that's another squeeze. If you look down to the bottom there, there's a little orange arrow pointing to the trough in bandwidth, and that's how we identify when there's a squeeze or a bulge.
So John, when you're starting to get that squeeze, when that volatility is really starting to contract, is there kind of a probability that the trend's going to continue? Like for that second one, did it give you a little bit of indication that maybe it's going to break one way or the other, or you just wait for the break and then you go with that trend?
I mostly wait for the break. Sometimes you can tell from the trading dynamics going into it that there's weakness building up. Very often we'll use volume indicators like intraday intensity. That's one of the components of the O'Neill accumulation distribution ranking. So sometimes we use an indicator like that. And if it's tailing off, if it's showing weakness, then we'll look for a decline. In this case, you got a little bounce to the upper band and then a downturn. That we call that a head fake. And yeah. That's actually my favorite trade in relation to the squeeze.
Mm-hmm. And so what is it that you're using as kind of your signal? Again, just to be clear, is it that break
yes.
below the band
It's a big reversal of price to the downside. And if you, I know it's a little hard to see on this screen, but you can, you'll be able to go home and look at this on the big screens that you all have. You can see that there's a nice price reversal in there to the downside, and that would be my signal.
Okay. Very good. The next chart. One more area here to go over.
So that's a classic W bottom. It's a new low in price that's not a new low in relation to the Bollinger Bands. And for that, the signal is the reversal to the upside. Mm-hmm. And you can see that, the orange line there. I'm great. I'm pointing toward the screen.
I'm hopefully pointing for you. You let me know if I'm in the right spot with my red arrow.
You can see that we make a new low in terms of price, but it's not a new low in relation to the Bollinger Bands. You can see that from percent B, which is at a higher value on the second low. So we just wait for a reversal to the upside, and that's our signal. And you can see that leads to a very substantial rally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go ahead and we already talked about how the defaults for the Bollinger Bands are the
20. Yeah, but the bottom line here is really important. People use all different values. You know, some people use really short bands, 10 periods, and just plus or minus one standard deviation. Some people use really long, exaggerated. Just feel free to adapt all of this to your trading style and to what you do. There's nothing magic about these numbers. These are the numbers that suit me and my trading style and my personality. And I've used for years, but there are tons of people using different values and getting value from this framework.
Yeah, perfect. So some of the indicators, you've mentioned this percent B. Let's talk a little bit more about that. When you say it's where you're at in relation to the Bollinger Bands,
so it's
kind of like a stochastic?
That's exactly correct. That's the formula for stochastics with the Bollinger Bands upper and lower substituted for the periodic high and the periodic low. So that's exactly correct.
Okay.
And I did that on purpose because I wanted bandwidth to read like a technical indicator that, that technicians would find intuitively easy to use. So it's just the distance from the last price to the lower band divided by the distance from the upper band to the lower band. So it'll be one when you're at the upper band, zero when you're at the lower band, and 0.5 when you're at the middle band.
The midpoint, exactly. Okay, here's another chart on SPY. So what are we looking at here?
So in the smaller circle shows you a little tiny W pattern. We make a new low in price that's not a new low in relation to the Bollinger Bands. You look at that little tiny line, orange line, on percent B, and you see the divergence there. And then we come back up and we make a new low in price inside the bigger circle. And you can see the longer term divergence. And this is something that happens time and time and time again. We call it the fractal quality of these patterns. We'll make a little W bottom, and then it'll become part of a larger W bottom. It just, the pattern repeats so many times. Very, very interesting. It's just the sort of thing that adds value. It increases your confidence in the patterns that you're seeing. Often you'll see a little W on the left-hand side of a big W and a little M on the top, W, and then another little W on the right-hand side. Makes it much easier.
And so again, you know, what you're really looking at here is that divergence where the new low is happening, but you're not getting that confirmation of a new low on the percent B. And so you just look for that reversal again, right?
Exactly.
Okay, great.
And we wait for the reversal because when we just have the new low, right, we wait for confirmation. We wait for the market to confirm our opinion because it's only opinion until you get the confirmation.
And right. And on this chart here, where would you consider the confirmation to happen? Is it
It's the first green bar
inside
the lower band.
Okay. Wow, that's pretty early still.
Quite the move from there.
Nice thing about these trades is that you're risking a very small amount. Yeah. If you go to a new low, the trade's broken. Right? So And the potential is, you know, for a trip to the upper band. So you're risking a small amount in chasing a much larger potential. And so the risk reward of these setups is quite attractive.
Now, you got a nice move here. You know, what we're showing here on SPY, all the way from 410 up to 454. It did touch the upper band here right around 450. Would that have been a sell signal at all, or you just kind of let it ride until you kind of get that same non-confirmation?
Exactly. There's nothing about a tag of the upper band that's a sell signal in and of itself. You need something else, you know, some other form of technical deterioration, because prices can and will walk up the upper band and they can and will walk down the lower band. And that's not a long series of buys or a long series of sells. That's simply a walk down the band or a walk up the band. What we look for is, you know, conditions to deteriorate and a pattern to form that tells us that, you know, it's reversal is ripe.
Yeah, you can almost see it on the left-hand side of the, if you go back for a second, on the left-hand side of the chart, how it's just walking along the upside of the band and just bouncing off the moving average, which is, you know, it just keeps staying in the upper part.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's a typical, that's the typical signature of a strong advance.
Mm-hmm. Now we've got a chart here with Boeing. And so now we've gone from an index, because you can use this on indexes, individual stocks. So is there anything that you have to change when you're looking at an individual stock, or all of that math is kind of done for you, right?
No, this is where I started. I started trading individual stock options using these tools and such like that, using 20 periods and plus or minus two standard deviations. Mm-hmm. Here you see on the left-hand side, you see a classic little M-type top that leads to a really meaningful decline. And then, you know, that's followed by a W-type bottom, again, defined by the Bollinger Bands, and which leads to a substantial rally. So you look for these setups, and you know, that's the nice thing about trading individual stocks. With the market's the market, right? You got one market basically, yeah, for mm-hmm. Americans, and I suppose that there's variations, like, you know, the Dow or the QQQ, something like that. But the market's the market. For stocks, you know, it's a different thing. You just go through until you find, you know, the stock that has the right pattern, the right setup for you, that has the right risk reward characteristics for you, and trade that. And if you know, but you can't, you know, try to force trades on every stock. You just go through and, you know, rifle through the list, and eventually you find a setup that you like and you go with it.
Mm-hmm. Are you generally using daily timeframes, weekly timeframes? What's your kind of preference, or all of the above?
I'm a daily and weekly trader.
Okay.
I use daily Bollinger Bands and weekly Bollinger Bands.
And what is your normal timeframe in terms of your holding period that you're looking at, or just as long as the trade is working, or do you have kind of a typical for you?
It could be as long as the trade is working. You'll see when we talk about stocks later on, an example of a holding that I've held for years and years and years. It's just the right stock in the right in the right, you know, environment, and doing really well. So I don't find any reason to sell it. I guess there's a difference between trading and investing. Sometimes you get into something in a trade and you realize that it's going to work out to be a longer term investment. So maybe you, instead of selling it, you trim it back a little bit and hold on to the mm-hmm. to the remaining position and try, you know, for a home run instead of a single.
Yeah, gotcha. Let's just talk real quickly a little bit more about the bandwidth. You know, again, this is kind of how wide the Bollinger Bands are, what you're looking at here. And so
So this is just the distance from the upper band to the lower band. We call it bandwidth, and we divide it by the middle band so that it's a normalized quantity of mm-hmm. percent. Again, very simple calculations. We use these to find squeezes and bulges. So we say that a squeeze is where trends are born, and a bulge is where trends go to die. you see that here. We got a couple of squeezes that lead to big moves. And on the right hand side of the screen, you see a bulge that marks the end of that downtrend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what about around earnings? I'm sure that a lot of times the extra volatility with earnings, you get a gap up or a gap down. That's going to potentially really increase that Bollinger bandwidth. Do you handle those differently at all?
You know, the market's reaction to earnings has become ever more problematic over the years. Especially the market's reaction to guidance, which seems ridiculous to me, because at best it's a forecast, and often they're dead wrong.
Right.
So, but the market really is taking guidance to heart and putting a lot of volatility into the market. It just makes our job harder. That's all. It is. You know.
Yeah.
You have to. One of Charlie Munger's favorite sayings was that if you can't stand a real decline, then you shouldn't be investing. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that I agree with that in its totality, but I would say that a variation of that is, if you can't stand this sort of volatility that we're seeing in the markets now, one of these guidance reactions is going to cause you to get out of a stock, then you really ought not to have been in it to start with.
Right. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Here's another one with Caterpillar on the Bollinger Bandwidth. So what are we looking at here?
So just look at the dead center of the screen. You see a squeeze and a break to the upside leading to a nice rally. And then you see a bulge marking the end of that rally. And the reason I put this chart on here is when you see the bandwidth turn down like that, we call that a bulge. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get an immediate price reversal. It means that leg of the move is over, and you could easily get a consolidation or a reversal. You need to look at price and study what's happening. Often, it will be a consolidation, and you go sideways for a week or two to digest the move. Investment stocks, as they say, gotten a little bit ahead of itself, so it needs a pause to refresh, something like that. But sometimes it'll be a reversal. And if you look at the right-hand side of the chart, you can see a squeeze that led to a decline. And the bulge, instead of leading to a consolidation, leads to a reversal. And you head strongly in the other direction. So I wanted to show you both pictures of both sorts of reactions to bulges here.
Great. Well, this is, I think, a great tutorial for, people starting out with Bollinger Bands. Of course, BollingerBands.com is a place where they can get a lot more information. You also have YouTube channels. There's so much written about Bollinger Bands, not just from you, but from a lot of technical analysis. What's kind of your favorite place to send people?
We have a bunch of tutorial tutorial information at BollingerBands.com. You mentioned there's a big YouTube presence as well. Those are two grand resources for people who want to learn about this sort of investing and this sort of trading.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have John Bollinger apply these rules to the current market, talk a little bit about ETFs, and also talk about some stocks that are on his radar. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
MarketSmith will give you a huge edge in the stock market. Better stocks, bigger profits.
MarketSmith is the top research platform for IBD.
It's just the best tool for individual stock selection.
Everything within MarketSmith is designed to bring those best stocks to the surface.
It does a lot of the work for you of filtering down to the potential leaders.
It's when you take the training wheels off and you're ready to invest on a more professional level.
MarketSmith will help you take control of your investment life.
If you want to get serious about investing, start your membership today.
Welcome back to the Investing with IBD podcast. It's Justin Nielsen here, your host, along with my weekly co-host, Arusha Pieris, who joins me every week from O'Neill Global Advisors. And then we also have on the show this week, John Bollinger of Bollinger Capital Management. Of course, he is also the creator of Bollinger Bands. So we've been talking a little bit about how to use these technical indicators to kind of get a sense of buy signals, sell signals, and what's happening with the stock. So let's talk a little bit about the market, and we're going to go ahead and we're going to stick with thinkorswim just to kind of be a little bit more in tune with the Bollinger Bands and kind of see how to use these. Right now, I'm looking at the S&P 500 SPY. Do you have a preference in terms of what you look at with your market timing?
I like the tradables. So rather than looking at the index SPX, I look at SPY, or rather than look at the Dow, I look at DIA. Mm-hmm. Rather than look at the NASDAQ, I look at QQQ. I just feel that, what we're going to end up doing is with the tradables. So that's what we should analyze.
Right. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. So right now we've got SPY up. Certainly something that sticks out to me right here is the fact that you've got this, this touch of the lower Bollinger Band right there on October, 27th, which was right around the bottom of the market. Was there anything that kind of told you that this rally was potentially going to happen the way it unfolded?
So where your cursor is one of my favorite little Bollinger Band patterns. It's what we call a two-bar reversal at the lower band. It's where you have one bar, a big red bar, hopefully penetrating the lower band. That's when it's easiest to see and understand. And then immediately the next bar reverses that action and is back inside the band. So that was, we call those two-bar reversals. We trade them all the time. They're just you know, they're just terrific little setups. Once again, we talked about this a little earlier. They're very low risk reward setups. You know, you're risking just a little bit if you go to a new low. You know, you're only you know, your risk is very well defined, and the potential is a trip up to the upper band. And if it's really strong, then a walk up to the upper band, as you see here.
Mm-hmm. So we did hit that upper band. Anything that looks worrisome to you at this point?
Yeah, you had your cursor on it just a second ago. That peak in bandwidth on the lower thing where bandwidth turns down. Right there. Mm-hmm. So that's what we call a bulge. That's a very high value of bandwidth and tells you that there's been a lot of volatility in the market. In this case, it was positive volatility, prices rising. And when it turns down, is often an indication that either you're going to see a trend reversal. I don't think that's the case here. Or you're going to see consolidation. And that is, in fact, what we are seeing. We've gone sideways for 5 or 6 sessions here now, digesting the gains off of the low that we just talked about prior.
Mm-hmm. And then what are you looking for like, say it's a potential resumption of the trend? Is it just more on price taking out those highs? Or is there anything that's going to happen with the bandwidth that does it start turning up or something?
Well, so the ideal setup is to march sideways until you get to the middle bend, and then prices take off from there. You know, but like all ideal things, you don't see it all that often.
Right.
But when you see it, you really do know what to do, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the market. It never it often rhymes. It doesn't repeat. So it never traces out exactly the pattern that you'd hope for. Hopefully you're paying enough attention so that when the market does turn either up or down out of a consolidation pattern, you recognize that turn and act appropriately.
Mm-hmm. And let's just real quickly go over to QQQ. Certainly the tech has been dominant for most of this year a lot of talk about the Magnificent Seven and everything like that, kind of traced out in a similar way where you got this, this reversal. Now, it seemed like at first you did go below that lower band. This was an inside day that followed. Is that still okay to be inside the band again, but it's an inside day? Any conflict there?
It's okay. It's not a great one like it was on the on the SPY, where it was much, much clearer. I would go count 3 bars to the left where you have that large green bar. I'm sorry, 3 bars to the right. That would be my entry for this pattern.
When you've definitely cleared that high from the reversal.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Perfect.
Then we have the same exact situation here with a bulge rolling over and a consolidation. I would point out that, you know, the QQQs have really been running SPY for the past year or more. Mm-hmm. We started out with FANG, and then we got FAN MAG, and now we've got the Magnificent Seven. you know how that went. They're not only big, those stocks are not only big in QQQ, they're also huge in SPY,
which
is cap weighted as well. So they've been moving SPY around like no tomorrow. Yeah. So I don't know how much differentiation there really is right now between SPY and QQQ.
Yeah. You definitely do get some watering down in SPY, and sometimes you can get it to outperform when like oils and thing and industrials that aren't represented at all in QQQ or financials that aren't represented at all in QQQ. But I think you're right. For the most part, it's sometimes hard to tell them apart because the bulk of the weight is kind of in the same stuff. So, speaking of ETFs, something that you brought up in our pre-show was the fact that you kind of don't like ETFs as much. I mean, I'm sure they have their place for market timing, but what is it about individual stocks that you prefer over ETFs?
I think there's better risk reward and better appreciation potential in individual stocks than there is in ETFs. But you know what I was hinting at in the pre-show when we talked was the effect that ETFs have on the market as a whole. Mm-hmm. You know, ETFs are by rule required to follow the index that they're constructed from. So the mm-hmm. QQQ must follow the NASDAQ 100 and the SPY must follow the S&P 500. And they actually have to replicate them. That's the rule that governs them. You can look at right in the prospectus and see it. So what that does is it has this thing of welding all those stocks together. Some people, you know, think that when they sell out an ETF, it doesn't have any impact. Well, it does have an impact. You sell out 100 shares in an ETF and you know, a certain number of every stock in that index is then going to be sold into the marketplace by the people that create and run the ETFs. So those ETFs have direct impacts. An especially pernicious example is with the levered downside.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
Downside ETFs. You know, people buy them and that results in direct and immediate selling in a multiplier effect, whatever the multiplier of the ETF was. So if it's a 3x multiplier, you buy one share, it results in three proto shares, if you will.
Yeah. Derivatives, you know,
the ETF being sold. So, and then going into a low, you have a lot of people stepping up and buying those inverse ETFs. And that just creates a firestorm of selling into the low. And I don't think people are really aware of this kind of knock-on activity if they're trading of ETFs.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that we're going to eventually start seeing a switch from where passive investing was the way to go and outperforming a lot of the active investing eventually back to a stock pickers market and active investing is definitely a strategy to use?
You know what they say, from your lips.
I know. I've been hoping for that for a while.
I think that for an individual investor, market timing is a pretty tough mistress. I mean, it's really, really hard to do and do well. I think for a typical individual investor, they'd be much better off on picking stocks for the long run and focusing on, for example, using Bollinger Bands on them. And when you pull back to the lower band, adding to that position, mm-hmm. A typical idea for a high relative strength stock. I think most people who are doing this, a lot of people doing this to be day traders. I'm not addressing them. I'm talking about people who are trying to create their retirements and trying to invest for the long haul and create real wealth for themselves and their families. I think those people are much, much better off owning these stocks. We call them growth stocks. They're companies that are able to grow year after year after year after year. And, you buy them on pullbacks and you just hold on to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, one other thing I want to address, because you kind of said that when you first started out, you were trying to find your way and you did try fundamentals and technicals just spoke to you more. When analyzing the market, it's really hard, especially the last couple of years with everything that's been going on with the Fed and, we've had wars in Ukraine, Israel, Hamas, all of these things, recession fears, inflation fears. Where does the macroeconomic picture fit in to your thesis, or does it just not?
No, I actually years and years ago, back in the 80s, I coined a term called rational analysis. It's the juncture of the sets of fundamental and technical analysis. And I believe that, that's actually the way to go. Actually, me and Bill O'Neill talked about this quite a bit because he was a real believer in that idea as well. I think he had different terminology than I had. But it didn't matter because our views were more or less the same, that you use the best the best tools from the fundamental toolbox and use the best tools from the technical toolbox, and you combine them to make a superior tool set for investing.
Excuse yeah. me. Perfect.
You know, I think that's the way to go. You know, mm-hmm. The world's a little poorer for a bill having passed recently, but you know, I think his ideas are powerful. His RS rankings, his accumulation distribution rankings. I think these are really, really great tools.
Mm-hmm. And then we should also mention you mentioned Charlie Munger earlier. Of course, he just passed yesterday as we're taping this. So yeah, we've lost a couple giants in the field, but we still have some left. So we're really glad that you're here with us, John, to share your knowledge. And when we come back, we're gonna go ahead and talk a little bit about the stocks that are on John's radar. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Welcome back to the Investing with IBD podcast. It's Justin Nielsen here, your host, and joining me as he does every week is Arusha Pieris from O'Neill Global Advisors, helping out and making sure I stay on the straight and narrow path. Also, keeping me within my bands is John Bollinger this week. He's, of course, at Bollinger Capital Management and creator of Bollinger Bands, and he's been helping us kind of learn how to use this technical indicator, not just with markets, but now we're also going to venture over into individual stocks and talk a little bit about some stocks that are on his radar. So let's go ahead and start out with Cintas Corp. I've got that up here with the Bollinger Bands and your percent B and your bandwidth. So tell me what it is that you like about this one. It's certainly hard to find stocks right now that aren't extended. So what is it that you're looking for here?
So I brought three stocks to chat mm-hmm. with today, and they're different sorts of examples. Cintas is an example of a long-term hold for us that we add to on pullbacks. Wow. It's a stock that has been growing for years and years and years, both in terms of its stock price, but driving that is a very, very strong fundamental growth from year to year that's gone on for more than 20 years now. So these sort of stocks are, you know, long-term wealth producers. You buy them and you hold them for the long term. And they can, you know, they can just add value to your portfolio. Often, you know, something like this can be a trade that turns into an investment. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, you find a nice setup in one of the great growth stocks where it's pulled back, maybe makes a little W bottom. And if it takes off out of there and becomes really strong, maybe instead of just taking a profit and walking away and trying to find another situation, you can do what we do, which is trim the position back a little bit the first time it makes a meaningful high in the market. And then let the rest of it ride for the longer term, as long as the dynamics of the stock don't change. And we're looking, you know, very simple stuff. We're just looking for year over year revenue growth, year over year bottom line numbers of all sorts, sales growth, so that it's the engine that drives the stock. So there's a great chart of it now. You can see its longer term view. And what we do
actually, Justin, maybe switch to the monthly chart, because I think that really gives the amazing view. And John, just very quickly, is there an exit strategy to this, or are you just gonna? I mean,
exit strategy would be is if the, you know, the business itself, the underlying business itself changes for some reason. If some, you know, if private equity comes after it and forces management changes. But with a stock that's performing like this, you know, it's pretty easy for a board of directors to tell private equity to go
Right. Go and have some licorice, right? Some black licorice.
Yeah.
So the idea with Bollinger Bands on this, so we'll run weekly Bollinger Bands on a stock like this. And when it pulls back to the lower band, if nothing else has changed, we'll you know, use that as a couple of things, just to add to existing positions, but also to get new clients that have come in to the process over the years, and give them an opportunity to participate in the longer term kind of capital gains that a stock like this can. You know, Bill did that study years and years and years ago, where he studied, you know, the best performing stocks of all time and tried to find out what common characteristics they had. It's the genesis of the Canslim approach. You know, and were he with us today, I'm certain that he would agree that this is one of those stocks.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why I wanted to switch to the MarketSmith chart, you know, not only just show this monthly phenomenal performance, but this also kind of fits into what we call the long-term leader status. The reason being is that it has this EPS growth rate that's pretty significant, 15%, nothing to sneeze at doing that annually, you know, for 3 to 5 years or more. But more importantly, the earning stability, you know, this is a low earning stability number. It goes from 1 to 99. The lower means less volatile on its earnings number. And so usually when you get kind of a nice growth rate with great stability and a relative strength line that is able to outperform long term like this on the monthly, that's kind of our long term leader. You know, that's exactly what we look for. So good to see that you're kind of in line there too. So real quickly, I'm going to go ahead and switch back over to the Bollinger Bands. For this one, do you think it would be better for us to take a look at the weekly chart in terms of that? Okay, so let me go ahead. I'm going to switch over to that, and I'll switch to the weekly chart with the Bollinger Bands in place. And when you're switching to different time frames, do you make any adjustments to your stats? Do you still use a 20 period and 2 standard deviations?
So in this case, it's going to be a 20-week average and 2 standard deviations of 20 weeks worth of data.
Yeah. Okay. And so it seems like it's been a while since it's kind of touched one of the lower bands. It's really kind of been sticking between those bands very nicely. If anything, it's kind of gotten up above the bands lately. So do you just wait then?
That's what a real strong stock will do. You know, it just it's a walk up the upper band. And, you know, on these pullbacks to the lower band, that's, you know, that's where we look to add to these positions. We wait for the decline to stop and we wait for, you know, some evidence that the trend is going to resume. So that's a technical overlay within a, you know, fundamental idea.
So let's talk. Go ahead.
For me, that's the cat's jammies, right? I mean, that's you know, that's when you ever see these pictures in, you know, like in Boston, the eight people in the skull pulling pulling the oars in a coordinated manner. That's what you have going on here. You have all these different pieces and they're all coordinated and they're pulling you along. You got a strong stock and a strong group and in a strong sector, you know, and with great fundamentals and great technicals. You just keep on piling the information on.
Wonderful. Let's go ahead and switch over a little bit more into the tech space. Intel, of course, you know, Intel, ticker symbol INTC, it's kind of gotten its lunch eaten by NVIDIA and AMD. And, you know, I mean, this used to be the big behemoth. Do you think Intel can come back? And why is this on your radar now?
So this is an example of another sort of thing that we do here. You know, we went through that very long period of low interest rates. And we looked for stocks that had dividends to replace bonds in our portfolios. And Intel came into our management world in that guise, right? It had a big fat dividend. We examined it pretty carefully. We thought that it was sustainable. So we bought it as an income generator in the portfolio. But like IBM, which we bought in the same mold, both of them have turned from income generators into capital gains vehicles. And as of now, we see both of those, you know, with substantial upside in front of them. We think Intel can actually go to new highs here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and getting back to its old highs, I mean, that would be something. And paradoxically, of course, the more it goes up, the less that yield gets to be, right? Because you're changing the denominator. And the yield on Intel now is just a 1.1%. So not much to write home about. But as you mentioned, you've got a great deal of capital appreciation as it's gone from what was this, like 20, you know, below 25 to 45 now. So a good 20 points, almost a double in not too long a period, under a year.
So if you take a look at a very long-term chart of it, you can see that there's some trouble coming up for it. It's got some pretty important hurdles to overcome here in terms of past resistance, where a lot of shareholders are going to be saying, oh my God, I'm whole again. Let me get out. So there's going to be a lot of supply for it to work its way through. And we think it's going to have, you know, a relatively tough time doing so, but we see no sign of it weakening yet. So we got our eye on it.
It's interesting. I have a Market Smith chart up on another screen here, and I put it on the monthly chart, and it's running right into its 50-month moving average. I just have one moving average on the chart, hitting it in a very similar manner that it's hitting the upper band on the monthly chart that Justin's shown right there.
Well, Arusha, you know, that's what moving averages often do, is they show you if they're well suited to that vehicle, they show you where the past areas of supply and demand were and where you stand in relation to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with the fact that it's kind of running potentially into this former area of resistance, what do you do? Are you looking for signals that, okay, this resistance is going to be too much and we have to back away? Or do you just kind of damn the torpedoes full speed ahead?
No, not damn the torpedoes. And the torpedoes are real and you have to pay attention to them.
Yeah.
We'd look for signs of technical deterioration, which we haven't seen yet. That's our primary thing. We would also look, you talked earlier about macro. We'd look at macro factors that we think might impact it. Frankly, it's building fabs and building them quickly and doing a good job of them. So the macro picture is actually relatively appealing. I don't want to get into the whole U.S. versus China and chip wars and all this thing, but I think people are going to appreciate Intel for some of the things that it can do. And that could potentially be a positive factor for the stock in the long haul.
Mm-hmm. And with everyone talking about NVIDIA, you know, how does Intel kind of fit in with, you know, again, just how NVIDIA kind of sucks all the air out of the room when people are talking about chips?
Okay, so put up a chart of NVIDIA.
Okay. And would you like a weekly chart here as well?
That's fine. Weekly's fine.
Okay, weekly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So NVIDIA's running out of steam. If you look at this chart, you know, NVIDIA's gains, period of big gains, are way behind it. It's been going sideways here for quite a while at a much reduced rate of appreciation. I think NVIDIA is one of those stocks that's probably gone a little too far, a little too fast, and is going to sit around and consolidate for a while. I'm not negative on NVIDIA, but I don't think that one really, it's Intel or NVIDIA. I think they're different stories and different situations. And, you know, in the right portfolio, I imagine you could own both of them.
Yeah. Very good. Well, let's go ahead and turn our attention over to Amazon.com to round out our discussion on stocks. Here's the weekly on Amazon.com with the Bollinger Bands. So what are we looking at here?
So can we have some more bars there? Is that?
Yeah.
Yep. There we go. So Amazon topped out a long time ago and been going, had a big downtrend, a sideways period, now trying to advance again, trying to recover some of that. It's running to pretty serious overhead resistance here in the 150 area. I think it's going to have an awful lot of trouble clearing that. Mm-hmm. That's not a negative. I'm not saying it's not going to be able to clear it. It's just going to have a tough time doing so. So, you know, the first two stocks that we talked about were what I call investment vehicles, right? That one was long-term growth candidate. Another is a turnaround situation from a stock that was wildly out of favor to a stock that's coming back into favor. And here we have what I think of as a trading vehicle, essentially. You asked about, you know, my holding periods and stuff like that. For stock like Amazon, you know, we look to buy setups and sell rallies. We look to sell tops and buy back in. We don't, you know, this stock's been going sideways for years now. And it covers a lot of ground while doing so. It's a solid company underneath it, especially with the web services and the cloud computing capabilities. So it's not going to go to zero, right? It's not going to go crashing down on you. So it's a great trading vehicle. You can get into it, get out of it, move around, especially for those people who like to trade options. There's tons of opportunities to do some option strategies around a stock like this. So, my last example here was specifically meant, you know, to be for traders. Opportunities to go long, opportunities to go short, in stock with really healthy underlying fundamentals, so that you don't have to worry about it doing what some stocks have done in the past, huh?
Mm-hmm. just to kind of put a nice bow on this, you're looking at a lot of different, I guess, strategies. You know, you're looking at those long term ones. You're looking at those trading vehicles. I could imagine with Amazon here, you're able to, you know, maybe trade around a core position. You know, for some of these where you're trimming a little bit on the way up, adding a little bit on the way down. Do you have a favorite? I mean, you kind of talked a lot of different ways to get into these stocks. Do you have kind of your bread and butter? What your favorite is?
So, two things. I run a classic investment company here. We provide investment advice to individuals, small plans, and such like that. And for those people, you know, these long-term growers like Syntus, you know, that's the bread and butter of that business. Mm-hmm. That's the sort of thing that people want to participate in. And we're looking at long-term wealth building. For more trading-oriented things, we have things like Amazon. We look at W's and M's and squeezes and bulges and such like that. We take a different approach for a long-term growth stock like Syntus. We use the bands to tell us where we might look to add to positions or get clients in that don't have exposure to that particular stock into that stock. So mm-hmm. It just depends on what we do. Nice thing about having an independent RIA and being active managers is that we have the ability to adapt what we're doing to market conditions.
Yeah. Kind of like what you said, you know, ETFs, mutual funds, they all have their mandate and they kind of have to stick to that, but you got a lot of flexibility to kind of go where the market takes you and have that flexibility to do so. Well, John, really, really appreciate you coming on the show. Appreciate you sharing all your knowledge, of course, on Bollinger Bands. Might as well go to the creator to get the full scoop. It was really great having you on. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Justin, Arusha. Really, really fun to sit and chat with you guys. And I look forward to doing so again.
Yeah, awesome. We'll definitely do that. That's going to wrap it up for this show. Thank you so much for joining us. And of course, make sure you join us next week, because we're going to have one of the crowd favorites back on, Anne-Marie Band from The Trading Book. She, I'm sure, uses Bollinger Bands herself. So we'll kind of get her take on some of the things that she's doing with options, futures, and some of the indicators that she uses. It's always a great show with her, a great educator. So hope you tune in for that. And thanks a lot for watching us this week. We'll see you next time. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast if you haven't already. We'd really appreciate it. You can also send us your questions and comments to investingpodcast@investors.com. We would love to hear from you and may use your comments on an upcoming episode. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, and nothing should be construed as a recommendation to buy, hold, or sell any securities. Make sure to consider consulting with your financial advisor before making any investment decisions.